Hello and welcome to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Shelby King, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Whitney Wright. Whitney, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks. It's good to be back.
Unfortunately, Tyler couldn't make it this week to record, but it's always nice to have Whitney in to kind of bring in a fresh new perspective. So we have a couple different topics to cover today. And the first topic is from DigiDay. So it's titled, How Travel Ad Spending is Starting to Reboot Across Europe. So as different travel restrictions relax across Europe, optimistic holiday advertisers are buying more and more ads to make up for lost time. They obviously had to cut down on ad spend once the pandemic kind of started rolling out because people weren't traveling and there were a lot of lockdowns. Though tourism is returning to the region, ranging from Greece to Lithuania, its resurgence has been tempered by new outbreaks and inconsistent travel rules between countries. So total ad spend in Italy, France, Spain, Germany, and the UK for the first half of the year was down nearly half compared to the prior year. So this is according to Nielsen's Ad Intel. And the heaviest hit month was April. While ad spending in travel is still far below pre-pandemic levels, and this is according to four travel experts that were interviewed for the article, it has been slowly rising since May, when countries like Italy, Spain, and Estonia outlined plans to restart tourism. So it only may be a fraction of what advertisers spent in January, but these increases suggest that advertisers are getting more confident about their ability to salvage some of the sales over the summer. So I thought this was just a good thing to include because I know the travel niche has been hit pretty hard, one of the most hard-hitting ones since COVID has started. Whitney, what are your thoughts on this?
This news isn't really surprising to me. Advertisers will put their money where they have hope, and with travel restrictions lifting and quarantine fatigue affecting more people, travel is going to increase. I think travel will continue to increase between countries in Europe, even if COVID numbers resurge, as it's unlikely that any country is going to go into full lockdown like before, though there may be some restrictions that get put in place. So like you said, it certainly isn't going to make up for last time as compared to this time last year, but travel advertising is definitely up and likely to continue its trend of increasing, especially as we get into the holiday season more, specifically paid advertising, which has been down in Europe. If you look at the U.S. travel industry by contrast, it will be the slowest in overall spending growth and share, which is likely to influence travel advertising here. The travel industry digital ad spending is currently in a 41% decrease year over year, and it is estimated that travel will account for only 2.4% of U.S. digital ad spending, which is down from 4.2% in 2019. I know that travel ad spending is increasing in the U.S. as well, but it's not going to reach anywhere near what it was this time last year, and it certainly, again, will not make up for the rest of the year.
Just out of curiosity, is there a place that, you know, once we are able to travel a bit more, is there somewhere in mind that you're like, I want to go there first?
I was supposed to go to Alaska this August. My boyfriend and I were talking about it, and that obviously got put on off the table. So I would still really love to go to Alaska. Is there a place that you were thinking about going?
Yeah, I don't know. I told myself at the beginning of the year that I would try and stay in the country more this year, just because I did a lot of international trips the year prior or last year. And the pandemic has definitely forced me to stick to that goal. So it's funny though, because in the beginning of the year, I'm like, I don't want to travel anywhere. If I travel, it'll just be within the US. Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% fine with that. And now that I can't travel or I'm forced to stay home, I'm like, actually, I want to go different places. So
yeah, right.
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
All right. Our next topic is from Media Post, and it's titled YouTube Levels Playing Field for Independent News Providers. So about 26% of U.S. adults say that they get news off of YouTube, and about 3/4 of those people describe YouTube as an important news source. And this is according to a new Pew Research study. So 42% of the most popular YouTube channels are independent, almost reaching parity with 49% of those channels affiliated with news organizations such as CNN or Fox News. So I thought that was pretty interesting that it's just about 50-50. Each channel has found a dedicated audience on YouTube, with about 23% of people saying that they often get news from independent news channels. And that's the same percentage for big news organizations. So many independent news channels ask viewers to donate money to help with their financings and operations. Given that YouTube can be a pretty unreliable source of revenue sharing, so about 41% of independent news channels accept direct donations, with 66% of those people using Patreon, about 25% of those using a YouTube membership, but they also accept donations through other payment methods like PayPal, Venmo, or GoFundMe. So these findings indicate that YouTube is actually a really important source of news, including people who maybe are not as satisfied with the more mainstream sources, but those channels are still the most popular among news consumers. Still, smaller news producers can develop a following on the platform and possibly sustain their efforts through direct support from their most committed audiences. So I thought that was interesting. That's actually kind of a big chunk of people who get their news off of it.
Yeah, I was surprised when I read this that over a quarter of people get their news that way.
I think we've talked about how we kind of each get news in the past. I still am using Snapchat to get my news. But I have found that I am like turning more and more to YouTube more than ever before. I feel like, especially while we've been staying at home, just having more downtime and watching longer form content, I feel like I'm totally out of things to watch on like Netflix. I don't really watch cable. Mm-hmm. Instagram, all those videos, I feel like I'm just watching the same ones over and over again. So I feel like YouTube is a place where I can find longer form and unique content.
Yeah, I actually get my news through newsletters mostly. I subscribe to the New York Times newsletter and then the Daily Skim. But then if I do want to look further into a news story or, you know, watch some sort of video, I definitely go to YouTube for those news sources. Do I think that it's a viable option for most smaller news sites? Probably not. However, there are definitely some sites that could pull this off if they already have a strong YouTube base, I believe.
Yeah, I think the key is that you must have a really dedicated audience on YouTube in order to make this work. But, you know, as we always say, you should always give it a try if you feel like it might work, and then just go from there. Start really small. Mm-hmm. And just test the waters is kind of always our advice. And the last topic we have on deck today is from DigiDay, and it's about Google's new limited ad feature. So earlier this summer, Google began speaking to its publisher clients about a new feature called limited ads. So this would give them the ability to serve simple ads via ad managers to users who don't give their consent to share cookies or identifiers. So this feature actually isn't available yet, but publishers and other ad tech observers said the tool appears to be so limited in scope that they will unlikely be able to monetize those users at all. So the tool allows publishers to serve direct sold ads, specifically reservation and mediation demand, but not programmatic traded inventory, to users who have explicitly opted out from accepting cookies and being shown personal advertising. So this is meant to be a temporary solution while Google and other advertising and browser companies are working on different proposals for how advertising will function once third-party cookies are out of the picture. So I just thought this was interesting because it's like, Google's like, here's this solution that doesn't really solve any problems and won't really work for you guys.
Right.
Obviously, it's not rolled out, so maybe there will be some changes before it gets rolled out, but thanks, Google.
Yeah, right. I read through the article, and I think that we have to talk about the 12 purposes that this would depend on. So the article mentions how Google joined the IAB Europe's Transparency and Consent Framework, which is a framework for complying with GDPR that enables users to grant or withhold consent over how those in the space access their data. So this includes 12 purposes for which users can consent or reject to their data being processed. The first purpose is storing and or accessing information on a device. So the limited ads would be requested when consent for purpose 1 is missing, but have secured consent for purposes 2, 9, and 10. And this would be through a consent management platform, which would display a choice to readers. And I just think it's extremely unlikely that users are going to go through and choose what they want to share and not share through these 12 purposes, it's more likely that they're just going to decide what they want to accept or reject for all the purposes. And also with all the stipulations that have to be met for this, I see it unlikely that publishers will be able to monetize with it. Like you said, it's a temporary solution, and I think it really shows how different things are going to be once third-party cookies are gone. If this sort of workaround solution is going to make publishers little to no money, and it is a temporary solution for working around third-party cookies, I think it emphasizes how difficult this is going to be for some actors in this space once third-party cookies are gone.
I 100% agree with you that users aren't going to go and pick through 12 different purposes. I mean, the fact that there are 12 to begin with is kind of crazy.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of just an evolving matter, and we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens and how, you know, the industry is going to react to this. But
right,
that's actually all the topics that I've got going on this week. Is there anything else you want to include in there? Are there any new Ezoic Explains that you're working on? Could you give some teasers to kind of some new topics that might be coming out?
This week, I believe I will be working on a transcription service one that we have found very helpful called DIY Captions. So take a look and see if that is helpful for you. Keep your eyes peeled.
And then what would these transcriptions be used for by publishers?
We use these transcriptions sometimes to create blogs out of our videos. We don't do direct transcription to blog, but it helps kind of parse out kind of outline of a blog. And then also you can use it to grab snippets for tweets. You could use it for YouTube descriptions. We've done that in the past. You can grab some of that content and then put it in the descriptions to make your descriptions more cohesive. Yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do with these captions.
If everybody listening wants to check that out, they could go to the Ezoic YouTube channel. And there's a special playlist for Ezoic Explains videos. So I guess that's all that we've got going on this week. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you have a minute, please leave a review. Those are really meaningful to us. We love your feedback. And again, thanks for listening to another episode of the Publisher Lab.